Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, your host. And again today, I'm joined by Adam Barrett. We're going to continue a discussion that we left off with our last discussion on this concept of consistency of goals and priorities within an organization. And as you know, as a reliability professional in your own organization, that while reliability could be very important to you, and maybe your marching orders are you're in charge of reliability and make it happen, well, other parts of the organization may have received different directions. Or your organization is communicating well what all the priorities are, but there still can be some breakdowns in that set of communication. So whatever situation you find yourself in, I think what we wanted to talk about today was, well, what do you do about it, right? One is identify where you're at. And Adam, in the last conversation, you summarized it as there's basically two scenarios that people will find themselves in within an organization in relation to these priorities of function, cost, time to market, and reliability that help people to make consistent decisions or not. Could you just briefly summarize those two scenarios, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. I think what we, you know, kind of the way we characterize those two scenarios are that consistently across both scenarios, the executives or people at the highest level steering a program or a goal for a product, they have in their mind what the balance of priorities are with regard to functionality, reliability, cost, time to market. So the two scenarios are driven by how they approach getting there. The first scenario would be they take selected disciplines and give them one of those goals as their primary goal. So project management, it's time to market. Your bonus is tied to time to market, nothing else. You know, engineers, I need you to create this, this, and this functionality. Go off in the lab and do it. And scenario B would be they communicate and hold accountable everybody in the organization to all of those within the proportions that they see are important. So they communicate to everybody, you know, I want it. This is time to market is 30% of what's critical to us, and cost is, you know, 40% what's critical to us. And everybody has that same set of goals. And those would be the two scenarios which are going to create two very different natures and functionality to a project.
So the first scenario is probably easy to identify, is just ask the director of procurement or the director of engineering what their goals are, what their bonuses are based on. Now, they may give you the party line, is it's what's good for the organization, it's all in balance. So I've run into where you'll hear one thing, oh yes, reliability is very important, we agree, and they pat you on the head and you go away. Yet they consistently make decisions that are based on whatever it is that's their priorities, that either they've been handed to for business objectives or it's personal, it's part of their bonus. So how do you tell that if somebody is saying, yes, it's here's this ratio, we're going to time to market's important, and then followed by cost and functionality and reliability is in this position, but it's still important, we have to consider it. How do you know if that's real or just lip service?
Well, I think you have to ask the questions along the lines of what actually drives, you know, the actions and what's actually being measured by that person, which of course they're measuring what's important to them. Mm-hmm. So you brought up, you know, bonus, you know, obviously is a very, you know, direct thing. It links right to somebody's pocketbook, which is a, you know, a big part of their motivation of showing up to that company every day, right? I mean, people like their jobs, but you would probably do a different version of it if, it, you know, your income is associated to it. So, like you said, that's one metric that's important. Of course, there's lots of others. And so it probably would be not simply asking them what's important to you, because they're going to tell you what's important, but also adjust it to what they think you want to hear. Right. You need to ask what you believe, what they are measuring, you know, and things like that. And I think that's where you'll get more of a true blue, you know, it's driving actions and motivations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I remember doing that as a very young engineer. I was in a training class, and they had a number of the senior execs come by to basically tell us what they did and what their departments did. And I this one guy got up and talked about how important this function was and how useful this was and how much, you know, it went on and on and on about how critical it was to the survival of the organization and blah, blah, blah. And so I raised my hand and I asked him, so what's a typical day like for you? What do you do? And which at the time was just out of my naivety, if I pronounce that right, is I didn't know what senior execs did. And then he went on to talk about all these meetings he was in that had nothing to do with the priorities that he just laid out. So I interrupted him and said, so you're telling me that on one hand, these things are critically important to the survival of our organization, and your typical day doesn't spend any time on those at all? How is that consistent?
I have a feeling that this situation is part of what led you to be a consultant. Find people around me to do so.
Yeah, it might be part of the genesis of it. I didn't make a friend that day, but I heard back from him later that it made him stop and think about where if it is a priority, then why isn't he spending time moving that priority ahead? And I think that relates to what, even as a junior reliability engineer, I mean, you've got an insight that very few in the organization have, is because we see the entire product cycle. We're everything from concept phase and setting the reliability objectives at the start to dealing with field failures and failure analysis from customers' hands, and just about everything in between. So this concept of consistency, that's a pretty tall order, Adam, to say, hey, we'll just use the example that you laid out as example A, is that there's different bonuses for the program manager and procurement and engineering. Are you suggesting that the reliability engineer changes that bonus structure?
Yeah, well, I think the first question you have to ask is, you know, is the executive, which strategy are they choosing? They have to really ask themselves that. And if they decide to select the strategy of, no, I believe we'll do better with collaboration with everybody having the same goals, I think it becomes very natural for the way he incentivizes his teams to then reflect that. If he asks himself that question every time he creates an incentive or a milestone or anything like that, if he's doing it in that frame of mind, it's just going to happen very naturally. I don't think it has to be this big architectural change. And, you know, you also described like that gap between you as a junior engineer and the executive, and saying that's a really tall order to get them in sync. Well, you don't want to get those two people just in sync. It's a big staircase, but it's a bunch of small steps. So what would happen is the executive, now being aware of this, either, you know, from however he became aware of this gap, would say, okay, how do the people who directly take direction from me, how do I get them in sync with me? Mm-hmm. And once they're in sync with him, then they're going to take the next step. How do I get the people I can direct in sync with me? You know, so it's everybody's taking, just doing one small step of this big staircase, and the information through that passes from bottom to top. The executive doesn't have to, on his own, synchronize the engineers with him. They should be getting that through all these small steps of the organization. And the result is, you know, you have a synchronous organization, and it doesn't just happen once. You have to continually steer based on feedback. You know, you can't drive a car by pointing it in the right direction and taking your hand off the wheel. You're constantly observing, adjusting. Mm-hmm. And these proportions you had at the beginning for these four points might have changed by when you get to the end. And some of that change might have been directed by people in the middle of the organization. So you're actually now taking advantage of leveraging really the full skill set of everybody in the organization, because a lot of them are going to have really good feedback from a perspective that maybe an executive doesn't have. And so it's a lot of it's once you set the foundation, it really drives itself.
visions of Google self-driving cars are coming to mind at the moment, but what do we do as the reliability professional, though? Is, you know, we can recognize this, we can highlight it to parts of our organization and say, hey, look, this is running cross-purpose and reliability is not happening. If you have the advantage of having a disaster in the field, from a reliability point of view, you might get a whole lot more attention. You may get an opportunity. If you're just hired, there's probably some recognition that reliability is important. So I think there's an opportunity that comes along, and or you build the credibility to be able to create the influence to change the bonus structure, for example. I think one is recognizing it and making it visible that this is what's going on, and there's another part. Yet, if we really are siloed and procurement is based on cost of procured materials only, a subtle change that the reliability professional can illustrate is the cost of field failures caused by components not working.
Fred, I'd like to go back to something you started on there with. You said, as the reliability engineer, how do you mm-hmm. create this change? And I think there's a couple things that are really important to acknowledge there. And one is he or she is not entirely accountable for the change. What's important is that they are resolute in what their values are in their, you know, career and wanting to achieve. And these are usually passionate people to get into reliability. You're already passionate about the topic. Mm-hmm. You have to become very resolute in what you believe needs, you know, to be done and how organizations should function. You then are effectively, in some sense, a dating process of finding people who are compatible with that. So in other words, but you have to be open and honest. So as you did, you have to communicate this, you know, you have to communicate to other people in the organization. I believe we should have shared goals. I believe whatever your beliefs are. And give them the opportunity to respond to that and see what the response is like. Is it a healthy response, like the executive you described, where he said, oh, you kind of made me think about something. Mm-hmm. And you continue through there, but you stay resolute on what you believe. But if you get that kind of shut door, you know, sort of thing, this may not be the organization for you. You know, you may kind of, that's why I described it as dating. You might really be better off finding an organization that is open to that and has matched values, because you can't, you aren't an individual who has infinite power if you just work hard enough to change something or create something. You really have to find people who will partner with you on that, like any healthy relationship. I mean, a work relationship is like a marriage in some ways, right? It's in something with shared goals that, you know, you have to have some synchronicity there, and, mm-hmm. you know, people have to be working towards the same thing. You can't have dramatically different goals in a marriage or any kind of friendship or any kind of relationship. You're not going to work, you know, and you both are going to be better off achieving your own goals with something that's more in line. So I think that the reliability engineer needs to have the personal strength to have seriously evaluated what they believe should be done if it's important to them, and then to communicate it clearly, but be willing to actually take that to market to find, you know, the right. I mean, picture these Google engineers in a lot of cases where we see this culture of real openness and freedom and empowerment. If you took those same people and put them in, you know, let's say some other, roll back 30 years, you know, what would like an old military type organization be back, you know, in the 70s, and you put them in there, there's literally no way they could have the same effect or results in mm-hmm. that organization.
That's right.
So I think that that's part of it too.
So to be specific, some of the things that you can do as a reliability professional, that's, you know, you see something that needs to change, and you may have even been asked to help the organization improve their ability to achieve their reliability objectives. Because as we've talked about before, Adam, it's important. There's a growing expectation, an ever-increasing expectation, that what people put out into the products, into the systems, or put onto their factory floor, that it should just work, and that it has a fairly high threshold of requirements around that it just works, that it's reliable. So as a reliability professional, one is, what's driving the decisions in your organizations, and then make that clear. And as Adam's alluding to, is if you can find a champion or two, or if you can find some like souls that understand that reliability is important, is that's your core team, basically. Now, they could be leaders in the organization, not necessarily by position, but they could be thought leaders, or they could help identify where the trim tab is on this ship so that you can adjust the direction of it. The other piece that you can do is measure the consequence of making poor decisions. My classic example is that if procurement is going to reduce the cost of a part, it probably is going to reduce increase its failure rate. So if you know what the cost per failure is of a field item, or what's the total impact of a change in failure rate, make that visible. Bring it to the design review saying, yes, that field effect transistor costs less and it doubles the failure rate, and, which that alone may not be convincing to anybody, is then say, and it will cost us $18,260,000 extra because we saved a nickel per part. Quantify the impact, help people make those balances. And you may not change the procurement organization's bonus structure, but by illustrating the larger impact on all the other functions that are important to the organization, it's going to eventually influence how their bonuses are structured. And I've seen this happen, and Adam, I'm sure you've seen this, is where by communicating those inconsistencies and enabling a way to measure the impact on reliability, which we're concerned with, it can help modify those balances and how things are measured. So instead of just cost of purchased parts, it was total cost of ownership of that part. So if that part failed more often, that counted on their cost equation. But we could work on making that measurement possible. So it's one of the ways we can go at that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what I'm kind of looking for, Adam, is I think how can we help the reliability engineer that recognizes some of these things? And I think our discussions to date have been about recognizing these things. And I look forward in our future conversations to look at some of the other pieces that will tie into this culture, but also what we can do about it, what the professionals can do.
Well, Fred, if they want to be the champion, as you described, the reliability engineer can't just go out there and wave the reliability flag. You're not going to be a champion. You have to be the person who acknowledges, hey, I think at the top of the organization, this is the balance of what they want, and start championing that. So you're going to champion what I was just saying, I think, is the foundation of all this, is the balance and consistent set of values across the organization. Be that champion. Mm-hmm, you're be the guy who says, no, I clearly see that reliability is, 30%, and time to market is this, and cost is this, and you're going to get everybody's attention with that, because that, if you are helping create a consistent message, I think that, and people are hearing what they're accountable for right now, what the proportion is, but they're beginning to understand and, kind of reflect what this conversation is about, that why isn't the proportions that are at the top reflecting in each role? And if you become that champion, now you're the champion of culture change. That is very big. Yeah. And so, and you can do that as the engineer, as the, first year engineer. So as you kind of described how you did.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly can happen. All right, Adam. Well, let's wrap it up for today. And I hopefully like our listeners is that a couple more ideas or questions are coming to mind. I'm going to be taking some notes for our future discussions, but I really look forward to hearing what you, the listener, have to say, and help us guide our discussion a little bit into areas you'd like us to discuss more, and send your questions over or leave a review. We'd certainly appreciate that. Well, thanks, Adam. I think we're going to wrap up for today, and I look forward to getting that cup of coffee with you on our next episode.
Sounds good, Fred.
All right. Take care, Adam. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.